With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the 15th episode of the Extreme Sports Performance Podcast. My name's Ryan Blake, I'm the founder and CEO of Extreme Sports Performance. In this episode, I'm going to be speaking to Paul Hines. Paul is the head MMA coach at the MMA Clinic in London. I'm going to be asking him the questions I ask all my guests. Who he is, what he does, where has he come from and what has he done along the way? What are the key moments from his career so far? What are his top areas of interest? What are the most valuable things he's learnt? Who are his top influences? What are his top resources for information? What are his top sports performance exercises and or drills? What are his top pieces of advice in life, exercise and or sport? And finally, where can people find him? We freestyle a little bit in between questions and towards the end about different things. Really enjoyed recording this one. Enjoy listening to it. Here we go. Hi, Paul. Thanks for joining us on the Extreme Sports Performance Podcast. Please, can you just let the listeners know, to start with, who you are and what you do?
Yeah, my name's Paul Hines. I'm the head MMA coach for the MMA Clinic, which we are based in Islington, Angel, North London.
Awesome. And what goes on there on a day-to-day basis?
So, we're kind of like, it's a gym for sort of martial arts. We do boxing, Thai boxing, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and MMA. And it's kind of open to anyone can come in at any level. But we have a competitive fight team for the Thai boxing, the MMA, the Jiu-Jitsu. And I kind of take care of the MMA side of things, and I also do sort of my personal training clients, so do a lot of the other coaches, and you know, we kind of run this kind of sort of martial arts centre for people to come in and experience martial arts in different forms and on the competitive level as well.
Awesome. So could you just give us a little bit of an idea of someone who is like an entry level athlete who comes to use your gym, and also someone at the other end of the spectrum? Because I know you've had a lot of successes at a higher level lately. Could you just give us a little bit of an overview on the different types, from kind of the beginner type amateur to the more professional elite fighters that you look after?
Yeah, so we're basically a grassroots gym. So a kind of like the vision of the club when we first opened was that, you know, you go back sort of 10 years ago, most of the gyms that had competitive fighters were for competitive fighters. So, you know, just the average person walking off the street generally would be thrown in the deep end and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, wouldn't stay. What we wanted to do at the MMA Clinic was we wanted to sort of nurture people along. So your average person coming in, you can come in as a complete beginner. You can be completely unfit, have no experience in martial arts. And then we'll kind of get you in. We're trying to nurture people to sort of get a bigger pool of people coming in, doing the sport, and then from there, take, you know, bring them along in stages, and then, you know, having the real high-end guys, you know, we've got sort of great coaches, you know, where sort of, you know, strength and conditioning, nutrition, and then sort of getting them along. So I think in the beginning, it's because it's a grassroots club, we're kind of sort of looking for the diamonds in the rough, you know. You're kind of like, all these people coming in, and, you know, every now and again, you get that sort of one guy, one girl that just wants to sort of take it to the next level. But it's making them feel... A lot of people have this preconception of sort of these gyms that, like, oh, God, I don't want to go there, full of meatheads, and, you know, why would... You know, who's going to take me seriously as a fighter? And we kind of try to bring it down a level and try to just get you through the door. And, you know, whether you compete or not, it's not our goal. It's to experience sort of the martial arts.
So... There's quite a wide range of abilities then. Could you just give us an example of the type of fights or the events that your kind of higher-end guys would enter and compete at?
Yeah, so I mean, at the moment we have one of our guys, Darren Stewart, who's fighting in the UFC. For people that don't know what the UFC is, the Ultimate Fighting Challenge. It's been around now for about 25 years. I'm sure a lot more people are available, you know, are familiar with it. But it's the kind of top of the pyramid when it comes to competitive mixed martial arts fighting. Everybody, you know, wants to get to the UFC. So we've got Darren in the UFC. We have several other fighters, you know, on shows like Cage Warriors, which is, you know, one of the biggest shows in Europe, feeds a lot of fighters to the UFC. So if you do well on Cage Warriors, you're more than likely going to get a, you know, a UFC contract. And then we kind of go down, sort of right down to the beginner's level. So, you know, we're fighting, you know, I like to think we're fighting in the very best shows in the world and Europe, and we're also, you know, helping support the growing sport. It's a growing sport. I mean, even though, you know, 25 years of the UFC, in the grand scheme of things, when you look at sports like rugby, you know, football, tennis, we're in our infancy. So supporting small shows that come along is important as well. So, but yeah, at the highest level now, say the UFC, say Cage Warriors, you've got to be on point. You know, we're talking about, you know, athletics at the highest level.
Fantastic. So could you just give us a little bit of a background on your journey to where you've come from and how you've got there and your kind of your personal experiences with martial arts?
Yeah, it's quite a long story, I suppose. I suppose from school, I always had a fascination with, you know, the fighting, really. I mean, you can call it combative kind of arts, or you can sort of call it lots of fancy words, but I was fascinated with, if I had a fight with that guy over there, who would win? Or if that guy fought that guy, who would win? And it kind of really, one of my earliest memories at school was sitting in the classroom and thinking, well, he's the best fighter in his class, he's number two, he's number three, I could be number four. And it kind of, like, kind of went along with that for a long time. But I grew up in the era of sort of Bruce Lee, and that kind of, you know, this kind of mysterious kind of martial arts. But at the same time, I went to school and I grew up in East London, so we have a great, fantastic boxing background. So, and I looked at boxing as, like, you know, this was the most, you watched boxing and it was, you know, a great art to watch. But I was kind of drawn to this, what if, you know, this guy took this guy that. And then sort of from school, my sort of journey kind of went the other way. I didn't do too well at school. The area I grew up in, nobody was going to university, you know. So I kind of fell along the wayside a little bit. I always kept myself in good shape. And I kind of really liked to sort of, you know, I was always that kid that, if you wanted to have a fight, I would fight you. I wouldn't always win, but I was always the kid. kid that would be like, yeah, okay, I'll have a fight, you know. I'd like to have a one-to-one fight with someone and see how it works out. And at the time, I was doing, you know, going to the gym, doing a little bit of boxing. And I would go around to a lot of these martial arts gyms at the time, and this is like the 80s. And a lot of the traditional martial arts, I really like the values that they instilled, the discipline and stuff like that. But I never really was confident with the techniques, to be honest. And I would think, well, that really won't work, you know, on the street. And, you know, there was no sort of ground fighting. Most of the sort of scraps I got into with a young man would end up on the ground. And I just didn't really believe in it. And then sort of in the 90s, along come the UFC. And it was like a moment. The first time I watched the UFC, it was like, that's what I've been thinking about. That's, you know, when I saw Royce Gracie win UFC 1, it was almost like that moment that I thought, okay, this is what's been going on in the back of my mind, and this is what I need to get involved with. So it kind of sort of stemmed from there, really.
Awesome. So obviously you've been involved in this for a long time. What would you say the key moments are from your career or your involvement with the sport so far to date?
I think the key moments for me was when we opened the MMA clinic. Up until that point, I was involved in a club called Pancras London, where me and a very accomplished sort of pioneer from the sport, Jess Loudon, we had a very small club, and mainly just to create fighters. When we opened the MMA clinic, that was kind of like, you know, a very key moment. I became the head coach, and I had lots of kind of access to other people and other coaches and stuff like that. What was the question? There were two parts to that question.
It was just what the key moments really are, were from like your involvement in the sport and your career really as a coach.
I think a lot of it, especially in the beginning, because it was a new sport, it wasn't like I was interested in football. So, you know, I played a little bit of football, then you'd go and, you know, you'd take a course in coaching. There was nothing out there for myself. You kind of had to make your own way through. So there was no clubs to go to, really. There was no coaches that you could sort of draw from. It was like the birth of a new sport. So everything in the beginning, sort of, especially in the 90s, was a little bit like the Wild West. I mean, it was all trial and error. It was all kind of like-minded people coming together and trying to figure it out. How do we grow? How do we, you know, get in contact with other people around the country that want to do this sport? How do we convince, you know, the local leisure centre to put on a show? When you try and tell somebody you want to put two people in a cage and let them fight, people were horrified, you know. So going from the 90s through the 2000s, it kind of, you know, went along. And once we opened the MMA clinic, and that was 10 years ago, it was like, for me, that was my biggest moment, because it really, the sport was starting to gain momentum, and people were recognising it as a sport. We spent the dark years of people thinking we was like gypsies fighting over the park, and you know, we was undisciplined, and it was this. And there was always that element, you know, the criminal element, especially in the early days, and just trying to get us away. We saw ourselves as martial artists, and we was trying to build this sport, which is today is huge, you know.
It is massive, and you know, with some of the big fights with the big names that have happened the last couple of years, it's a multi-million-pound industry now, and it has grown very quickly. So it's pretty exciting and awesome. So what would you say, Paul? Like, your top three areas of interest are like around the sport, around coaching, like what you personally find really key things to focus on at the moment with the people you work with?
I think a lot of things now, because we are competing at such a high level, and the sport has moved into that kind of area, for me, it's kind of like, you know, sort of nutrition is really important now. Our strength and conditioning has got a lot better, and just kind of having, you know, more resources, avenues, more coaches getting involved, like, you know, other people taking it seriously. So kind of just getting away from the sort of two guys competing against each other in the cage. We have to really look at, like, how do other sports compete at a high level? How do you stay injury free? You know, we've got strict rules on what, you know, our weight categories and stuff like that. So it's kind of just trying to look at other sports that are very successful and try to draw in all the other things. So for me, it's really like, you know, the nutrition side of things and sort of drawing in other sort of resources that are not sort of to do with fighting, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure. So it's like the, I suppose, like a wheel, really, a sports science wheel that most other sports would also kind of follow,
yeah.
Like preparation, recovery, nutrition.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Yes.
And then, like, how can we turn up on the day, you know, not injured and in the best condition we, you know, my fighters can be to win the match, you know, the contest. So and then, you know, looking at other athletes and what they do, you know.
I'm going to come on to ask a bit more specifics about exercises and drills later on, because I think the listeners would be really interested to hear what your thoughts are with that. I just remember that you told me a story once about one of your fighters. I don't know if it was Darren, whose other half was about to have a baby, and he had to decide.
It was Darren, yeah.
Was it him? Would you mind just relaying that story quickly? Because I thought it was a brilliant story, and it adds a really nice element to what we discussed earlier.
So if I lay a little bit of background about Darren Stewart, nicknamed the dentist, and he's not a dentist, it's not his job. So he came to me, I don't know, maybe 7 years ago, to do what we call an MMA intro. So before you join the club, especially if you can do MMA, you'll do a one-to-one with myself or one of the other coaches, and we'll just run through some sort of, you know,
with the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Make sure you can break fall. Make sure that you know how to tap if you get caught in a submission, a joint lock. Just some gym etiquette as well. And Darren came along and, you know, we had a really good intro together. He had a sort of good taekwondo background, and I remember saying to him, like, oh, what makes you want to do MMA? I want to become a professional fighter and get to the UFC. And I'm like, you know, I've heard it before. I'm like, okay, yeah, great. You know, you just got to turn up, train, and, you know, we can do that for you. And he did. He turned up and he trained and he competed and he got to the UFC. And then, so it was, we'd gone through the kind of amateur ranks with him, and he'd done really well. He just turned professional. It was second professional fight, and the Cage Warriors were doing a big show at the Copper Box Arena at Stratford, and it was really hard to get on the show, like, to get yourself, you know, get you guys matched. I spoke to the promotion and they said, yeah, we're happy to put him on there. He'd fought on Cage Warriors before. I said, just one thing. I said, his girlfriend's pregnant and the baby's due the week before the card. And they kind of looked at me and said, okay, if there's any complications, like, No, there won't be no complications, like, it's fine, you know. And they said, look, it's a big card, you know, lots of people want to get on it, you know. I said, look, I promise you, everything will run smooth. So, long story short, we get to the day of the weigh-ins, and we go to, I think, the Hippodrome, Leicester Square, they were doing the sort of weigh-ins, and Ian Dean, who's the matchmaker, said, oh, well, has the newborn baby. And I was like, well, she's not really had it yet. And he kind of sort of gave me that look and was like, okay. I said, but it's fine, you know, she said, we're covered, she's not going to have it today, is she? So Darren weighs in, all goes well. He phones me about 5 in the morning the next day. So I'm like, what's up? Oh, she's having a baby. So okay, great. Okay, all right. Everything all right? I said, yeah, everything's fine. I said, all right, I'll phone the promotion, I'll go and see him, and I'll apologise. No, I'm going to fight. He said, no, stay there, don't worry about it. No, I want to fight. I said, okay, all right. I said, have you eaten anything? No. I said, all right, let me speak to the promotion, and we'll see. Like, no, I'm definitely fighting. So get to the show, Darren's not there yet. He's phoning me, she's still not had the baby. I get there, I speak to Ian, I speak to Graham Boylan, and they're like, it's fine, don't worry about it, just tell him good luck with the baby, you know. And I said, no, he wants to fight. No, really, he doesn't have to, like, no pressure. No, he's coming, he wants to fight. And at the same time, we had Channel 4 that was with us, and they was looking for a story, so they're like, they've latched right onto us now. So Darren turns up, and I sort of looked him in the face and said, Darren, we don't have to do this. No, I'm gonna do it. All my coaches, my team are saying to me, Paul, you shouldn't let him fight. You know, say something goes wrong, his mind's not on it. It's a big fight. He's fighting a very good fighter. I put him to one side and said to Darren, like, we don't have to do this, mate. There's no pressure on you. Promotion are fine, and they'll get you back on the show. No, I'm going to do it. And I think at that moment, I looked at him and I said, this is what champions do. We do things that nobody else will do.
Yeah.
You know? And I said, if you want to do this, I'll do this with you. You know? And he said, no, I want to do it. Said, everything's fine. She's got a best friend with her. You know, let's get this done. He goes in there. He stops the guy in the first round. His mum comes and gets him, and his mum's this like woman from Jamaica. I don't know if you know any Jamaican women, but she's pretty vocal. She grabs hold of him, drags him to the hospital, and he just makes it in time for his son to be born. So,
fantastic. That's such a great story. And he hadn't slept or eaten anything. And
I think when I look back on it, it's just for me as a coach, there was this massive point of realisation where I knew I was responsible. I could call the fight off, I could override the decision, and I was just thinking, my God, am I going to stick this young man in a cage to fight another professional fighter who's come from a really good gym, who's trained really hard, and, you know, he could get hurt here, and do I really, you know, but I believed in him, and, you know, me and him made that kind of decision together that we were just going to go ahead and do it, and paid off. But I think there's certain points in people's careers, I think as coaches and as athletes, where you have to make tough decisions. And he's gone on, he's got into the UFC, he's living his dream right now, you know, and it's kind of hats off to him for, you know, his determination and his kind of that iron will to do what it takes, you know, and he's providing for his family. So
that's cool. That's so cool. I think I'm a big believer in, you know, the consistent high quality training and hard work people put in over a long period of time.
Yeah.
It all adds up. You know, even in situations like that where you're almost at the finish line, and then you know you there's a curveball, but you know all that work you've put in the bank is still there. It's great to hear stories like that. That's fantastic. So just to move on, mate, like, what would you say, I don't know if what we've just discussed would be one of these things, but what would you say would be the most valuable things you've learned as a coach are?
I think especially dealing with, like, young, mainly men, we've got quite a few women coming through now, which is fantastic. But it's just, first thing as a coach, I think not to judge, you know, I think that's really important. We get, and I think that was a vision that I kind of wanted to bring to the sport a long time ago, was to sort of, like, it doesn't matter who comes through the door. You know, the training will figure out whether you can do it or whether you can't. It's not my job to judge you. You know, I might have some cricket, thoughts thinking, oh, this person's not going to make it, or this person's, full of shit, or whatever. The training will sort that out. I think that's very important. It's just to sort of, don't be judgmental. The sport should be open for anybody and everybody, and everybody should get a fair crack at it. And that's what I feel like we do at the MMA clinic. We don't judge people, and also allow for ups and downs. You know, someone might be a slow starter that kind of picks up later on, and somebody, sometimes they come in full of themselves and they get humbled, but then not to sort of, berate them for it, like, let them naturally kind of find their own way. So they're really valuable sort of lessons that I've learned in myself. And sometimes, just don't be scared to sort of sometimes let your guys go to other places. I think martial arts, kind of in the beginning, had this kind of traditional, like, you come in and it's this kind of closed environment and we've got a secret that can beat everyone else. And it's not like, the reality of it is not like that. I think that's why a lot of traditional martial arts have failed, because they've not fought outside the box. And so sometimes you've got to let fighters go to other places and experience, other coaches and other things. So just kind of just have this real open mind, and sort of, like, say, for me, it's really not judging people, and sort of treating them as individuals as well. So
I completely hear what you're saying. I think the older I've got, the more experience I've had as a coach, I'm a lot more relaxed and I take a lot more time before I make decisions.
Yeah.
I was a bit of a hotshot when I was younger, and I didn't really process things very well, and I was always in a rush to try and reach an outcome, but I sometimes got it wrong. And I think there's just that, you get that humility with experience, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. And I've been really, I can remember when I first started coaching, you was kind of looking for a certain type, and someone would fit, you think they'd fit that certain type person that you want, and they wouldn't. And then somebody that you've kind of just breezed over, all of a sudden comes through, and you're like, wow, I didn't see this guy surviving, and here he is. Some of the best fighters I've had, if you met them, you would never guess that they were fighters.
I find the same with some of the strongest athletes I've worked with and work with still. If you saw them walk down the road, you wouldn't look twice. But they are absolute physical beasts. But yeah, it's judgment, and I think just having an open mind, being patient with people, it's such an important skill to have in any sport, and one that you can never perfect.
No, and I think for fighting, you're born. I believe fighters are born, and they don't even know it. And when I say a fighter, it could just be somebody who's just trudging through life. Never has a physical altercation with someone, but someone who always kind of never lets things get them down, and just always striving forward. And I think especially for the women's side of things now, we're having because the side of the sport was very male-dominated, and now the UFC has got some great women fights, and they'll come in through now. And, they have to compete. We don't treat anybody any differently. If you're a woman and you come to train with us, you get treated the same as everybody. So, and they're fighters. Like, you can't sort of say they're not. They'll stick at it and they'll grind it out. And especially, it's in the jiu-jitsu side of things now, if you come in and you see this, young lady in the cage, and you've got no experience, and she's got a lot of experience, I think you're going to be in for a rude awakening. And it's great that sport now, kind of, we have that open door environment, and it's say it's survival of the fittest, but you have to have that strong mindset to get to a certain level. And, you know, gender is irrelevant, you know, especially in the gym. Okay, in the sporting arenas, you know, men fight men, women fight women, whatever. And when you look at the best fighters in the world, they can compete, you know, the best women fighters in the world can beat 90% of the men walking the earth, you know. So it's just really good to see sort of the sport open up like that now.
Yeah, that's an awesome insight, Paul, and I completely agree. I think that it should be like that for everything, and there are some sports that still need to work on that. But it's great that, you know, wider martial arts and MMA are kind of heading that way now, and it's great.
Yeah, so it just brings more people through the door, you know, and
sure.
It kind of and the sport is for me, you know, it's and I think it's the same in a lot of sports, because there's so much sacrifice and so much hard work, it bleeds out into the real world when you're at work or when you're stuck on the tube or when things are not going your way. You know, you've got that mental toughness that you've built up in the gym and that kind of resolve, you know, to keep pushing forward. And I think, especially in martial arts, I think it kind of makes everything, you know, really. I remember like years ago when I'd done my driving sort of test and someone said, "Are you not nervous?" I said, "Well, I'm not going to turn up in my sort, you know, tight shorts with my top off. My family's not coming to watch me drive, and my friends are not coming to watch me drive. And if I fail my test, I'm not going to get shit beaten out of me by the driving instructor. So no, I'm not. I'm not that bothered, to be honest. So you know, I think it kind of the sort of gym, especially at the competitive level, is very tough. I think everything else in life can seem pretty normal. You know, you don't get, you lose that kind of anxiety if the bus is late or somebody pushed you on the tube or somebody's been a bit of a dick at work. You know, you're not really bothered.
So, I think, as you know, I work with a lot of young athletes, and yeah. I think the difference you can see in them after a year or a couple of years of consistent, you know, good quality training, you know, pushing them to the right levels, making sure they're safe and they're doing everything correctly. The difference in their mindset and their confidence and just their personality is overwhelming. And, you know, it's great to see how they kind of don't just develop physically, but develop mentally. And their whole character kind of is transformed as they grow up. And I think that, despite the sport, any kind of physical fitness does breed that mentality and help improve that mental toughness, and that can, as you said, that can be applied to anything in everyday life, which, you know, it always helps to be a bit tougher, because at the end of the day, life is bloody hard, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, especially at a competitive level, because to get to where you are at a high level, you would have failed so many times.
Mm.
Nobody goes through. I mean, you might see a fighter who's undefeated in the cage, but he's not undefeated in the gym. You know, he wasn't undefeated the first time he trained. He was defeated many times before he became that person that you see competing at that level. And I'm sure that's in every sport. You know, if you're not getting humbled along the way, then you're not gonna develop. What it takes to compete at the highest level. So I think our sport, it's very humbling in the beginning, and especially seeing, you know, every man thinks he can fight just like he thinks he can fix the boiler. So, you know, it, I always use the analogy, if you're in the car with your girlfriend or your wife and your car breaks down, you're going to pull the car up, you're going to lift the bonnet up, and you're going to look at the engine. Your wife or your girlfriend is going to call the AA.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Because you don't know how to fix the car. So why are you looking under the bonnet? You know? So, and I think it's a lot of that when we get sort of young guys coming to the gym. They just think they can fight. Well, you know, they normally find out very quickly that they can't. So, and then it's a process of building them up from there. So it's like, you know, leave your ego at the door. You know, that's why sometimes it's very easy to train women, because they don't have that preconception. They want to learn, you know, especially if they've got that fighting heart. They want to learn quick because they know they need to get the skills to keep them in the game. So, I would tell someone, a guy, to do one thing and I look around and doing something totally different. I would tell a young lady to do something and I look around and she's practicing what I told her to do. So sometimes they're a little bit easier to get along with. So it's just breaking down, like I said, in preconceptions that you just because you're born a certain way doesn't mean you can, like I say, doesn't mean you can fight, you can fix a boiler, you can fix a car. You have to learn these skills.
I love the car breaking down analogy.
Yeah.
I was giggling to myself because I've done that a few times.
Yeah.
No idea. Just trying to show off.
Up and you look at the engine and yeah.
Just hoping.
I'll just hit that and see if it works.
Hoping so. It might slightly impress them a little bit more. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, who would you say, mate? Like, who've been the biggest influences, or like throughout your time involved in what you do? Are any kind of key characters or key names come to mind?
I think from a very young age, you know, I watched a lot of boxing. There was a time, sort of the 80s, you had the Four Kings, Marvin Hagler, Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Tommy Hearns. I loved watching that era of boxing, competing against each other, because it was competitive. You know, they was all fighting each other, and they was all winning and losing with each other. I think moving on to the 90s was kind of really the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu family that founded the UFC and kind of blew the sort of traditional martial arts apart with their Jiu-Jitsu. So for the sports side of things, I think for actually the business side of things and turning, you know, your passion into a living, because I've been a full-time coach now for 10 years. I'm making a living out of coaching. I think it was me and Graham Boylan, who owns the MMA clinic. He's also owns the Cage Warriors, a big promotion as well. And just sort of meeting that guy who had the same amount of passion as what I did about sport, but had business kind of drive, you know, where I was passionate about training fighters, he was passionate about building an empire so fighters could fight, with the promotion and the gyms. So I kind of think, you know, from the sporting point of view, there were certain individuals, but then you meet people along the way that kind of, you kind of sync with each other really quickly, and you share the same ideas, but you bring different things to the table. So kind of meeting Graham, and you know, he was a very successful personal trainer at the time. He was running a kind of white collar boxing shows and had big sort of, again, bringing the general public into a sport, but could see where maybe the mixed martial arts was going and wanted to sort of get involved. And we kind of got together and it was kind of like full steam ahead from there. And just, you know, that was a sort of great inspiration for me. Going forward now, you know, I helped my wife set up her own Polite studio and stuff like that, where maybe I wouldn't have had the confidence 10 years ago to take risks in business. So that was definitely a big influence for me.
Awesome. No, thanks for those insights. I always find that one of the most interesting questions to ask guests, because everyone's answers are always so different. So I'll put some links in the show notes to those examples so people can find out a bit more information if they've not come across them or heard of anything related beforehand.
Yeah.
So if you needed to find out some information about something, Paul, what would be your top resources? Where would you go? Where would you look? Who would you ask?
Okay, so especially like in the beginning when I started coaching, again, I found it was kind of a lot of trial and error. It was kind of like, we was kind of like trying to source the information from, the internet at the time. But the creation of the MMA clinic, I think the biggest thing for me was getting on board other coaches. For me, I've been very lucky. I have a great support team. I have Michael Russell, who's my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu coach, who's phenomenal black belt. I have Chris Carley, who's my Thai boxing coach, who's trained some of the best Thai boxers this country's seen. And even recently worked with people like Charlie Peters, who's like UK number one. I have John Tandy, who's my boxing coach, who's again, he had a training facility in Big Bear in California, worked with some of the best boxers around. So they're my main go-to guys. Mm-hmm. So as an MMA coach, I see myself like as a generalist. I know a bit about boxing, I know a bit about Thai boxing, I know a bit about jiu-jitsu, and I kind of have to glue it all together and think, okay, that's going to work, that's not going to work. But having them on tap, where I see them every day. So if I've got a guy who's very good on the ground, good takedowns, good wrestling, but his striking needs work, I will sort of speak to John, I will speak to Chris. He might work with one of them on a one-to-one basis and stuff like that. And then we all kind of converse. Like a good example was Darren Stewart for May last year in Liverpool at the UFC, and we fought a guy that was really good on the ground, Eric Spicely, a guy from America. And I sat down straight away when we had the match made, I sat down with Mike, my jiu-jitsu coach, and we watched him, and Mike was like, wow, this guy is really good on the ground. I mean, we've got we can't go to the ground with this guy. Darren's, capabilities, this guy's on another level. So, okay, and then I spoke to Chris, who's Darren's striking coach, my Thai boxing coach, and then we watched a guy, and Chris is like, oh, Darren, knock him out. The guy's got no stand-up, his movement's all wrong. And, and then all three of us will sit down and watch the fight and say, okay, this is where we're going to work. And, Darren goes in and knocks him out in the second round. And when the guy never took us to the ground once, and he really tried to get us to the ground. So it's nice to have surrounded by other coaches. I think if if you can have them, like there and then, with you and talk to you all the time, I think that's great. I mean, I must admit, I do like a bit of YouTube. If I'm not sure about something, I'll YouTube it or see what other people are doing as well. I think it's a great source of free information. We're so lucky now, where we was years ago, where there's so much out there now online for free, that if you can, if you can be bothered to sift through it all and then find what you think, what works, and then take the time to drill it, it could work. Also, another thing that I use a lot is my gut instinct. If I will watch something or I'll see something and I think that's never going to work, and I might sort of put it in and test it in the gym a little bit, and sometimes I'm proven wrong, most of the time I'm proven right. So I will use my gut instinct. So my coaches, YouTube, but I really think sometimes my gut instinct is, I like to sort of use that. I like to trust it more now than I would have done years ago, or maybe a little bit more influenced by somebody else. But when you build these relationships with these fighters, and it's not always black and white. Some fighters are very, very different. I mean, you've got this super confident guy that never seems to be stressed. Then you've got the guy who's a little bit more nervous, he's a little bit more nurturing, We've got the guy who's fantastic in the gym, who struggles with the big shows. You know, you've got the guy that doesn't seem to do that well in the gym, but you take him to a show and he just comes out of his shell because he likes the light and the cameras and the people, the media attention, and he handles it really well. So sometimes someone will tell me, oh yeah, this guy should be a bit more careful, but I'll know my fighter because I spend a lot of time with him, and I think, no, you know what, my intuition is telling me we can get away with this and we can get away with that. So I'll go with that. I'm not scared to use it. I'm not scared to be wrong either, so I think that's important as well.
I think gut instinct is probably one of the most important things to have as a coach. That definitely from my experience, like, because it's always great to be surrounded by people and ask advice and have conversations. But you know, it comes down to it where when you're responsible for something, you've got to make the decision yourself, haven't you? And you have to do that. You know, you have to do that individually. You can't really ask any. You can ask as many people as you want till you're blue in the face, but you have to make those final calls with things, and it's not easy.
And for me, I've got no one I can hide behind. So
yeah,
like, I don't mean that sort of in a bad way to my other coaches. Like, I'm seen as the head MMA coach. So sometimes one of my, like Mike, will say to me, like, we don't really want to go to the ground with this guy, but I might, sometimes I might override that a little bit, and because my gut instinct is telling me that it is, and you know, if it goes wrong, I have to take responsibility for it. But I still try. And there's a lot of science around sort of your gut instinct now, you know, that says like you should listen to it, you know.
Yeah.
Especially if you're connected to the sport where you spend a lot of time with certain fighters and you have that connection with them, you know, you kind of tune in with each other and stuff like that. And, like me and my coaches, I'm surrounded, we don't agree on everything, but we will come to a happy medium, you know. And sometimes I will say no, I want to take this fight in this direction, or we'll just work a little bit harder, you know, on these takedowns, and we'll work a little bit harder on that. So I think it's not afraid of getting it wrong, but at the same time, you know, you have to rethought, you have to make a decision, and sometimes go like, you know what, this is what my gut's telling me, I'm gonna go for it. So trust it. You know, I think if you spend a lot of time with your athlete or with your team, that sometimes it's the right thing to do.
I think I spoke to a few other people about this year. I think the other thing is athletes can tell if, you know, you're being honest with them, or if, you know, you're positive and confident that this is the absolute right decision for them.
Yeah.
And yeah, as soon as you kind of lose their trust, or if they're not sure you're sure, it's a vicious circle, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's, you know, like, I still see it's a big deal to put somebody in a cage to compete against somebody else. That's, you know, again, as far as you're concerned, they've trained very hard to beat your guy, you know. And there has to be a trust. It's an people say it's an individual sport, you know. Your guy's in the cage facing your opponent, but your team's on the outside. There's normally me and two of my other coaches, and we have to build that connection between our fighters. So constantly listening to our instructions, we have to be confident. You know, we are. We train hard. We win more fights than what we lose, so we're confident when we go there. Fights can be won and lost in between rounds. So, you know, just because my fight has not had a great first round, it's my job then for myself to go in the cage with one other coach, or send my two other coaches in the cage and lifting back up. We had a fight previous Saturday, one of our sort of main guys, Brad Wheeler, who's, you know, he's been fighting for years, he fought a guy, John McGuire, who's again got a great reputation as a fighter. First round, we'd say it was a 50-50 round, a little bit of stand up, a little bit of ground, and you know, in between that, I didn't go into the cage because he needed a lot of technical information that the other two coaches could give him. He didn't. He was confident, and then we got him in there. and he was, they gave him the right information, and just before the buzzer, I'm sort of behind him for the cage. He looked round at me and I said, come on mate, let's just pick this up in this round, you've got this fight. And he goes out and stops him in the second round, and it just had that vibe, you know, like we was all connecting, we was all doing our jobs really well, and he was fighting really well. So, you know, I think your fighters and your team need that trust. It might, like I say, it might look like an individual sport, but it's so complicated going into a fight that once you're there, you want that kind of sort of circle of trust to continue. And sometimes it's up and down. You lose in a couple of rounds, you win in the last 10 seconds, you know, of the third round of a fight you've been losing because you got that motivation.
Awesome insights, love it. So what would you say, and this is quite a difficult question to answer, but what would you say would be your top sports performance like exercises or drills that you would use more than others, the ones that you find are most effective and most beneficial?
I think in the beginning, it's kind of, especially when you're sort of being at a grassroots level to begin with, it's getting somebody in the gym and making it fun. So we'll use a lot of like pad drills and stuff like that, some light sparring to get them going. But once they want to start competing, then I think it's really important, for first thing first, is the condition that they're in. So my knowledge of strength and conditioning is okay, but we will use strength and conditioning coaches to make sure priorities don't get injured. If you get injured, you can't train. If you can't train, then we can't do anything with you. So I'll look at things like basic lifts, like deadlifts, you know, squats, stuff like that. Make sure their mobility and flexibility is good. You know, a lot of my fighters will go to yoga classes and stuff like that. So, kind of outside of the actual kind of skill base, we'll make sure that they're, one, that they're physically capable of doing the training. So, your basic lifts and your basic sort of flexibility and mobility. If they're going to compete, I think sparring's a great tool. I think we have to find out in the gym before we put someone in there, do they really want it, you know? And sparring can come at lots of levels. It can be kind of nice, you know, gentle and friendly, and everybody's like enjoying it. And then, but there comes a time where we call it big gloves, where you put the 16-ounce gloves on, you put your shin guards on, you put your head guards on, and you know, you kind of go for it, you know, and there's always new guys coming into sort of that competitive arena are going to be sparring with guys that have been competing and winning fights for years, and they're not going to hold back. I mean, obviously there's a level, if somebody's taking a beating, we'll slow it down, we'll pull them out, you know, but they have to know what it's like to be in a real fight, and you want to do it in the gym, and you know, find out where that kind of line is, where they, you know, are they enjoying it, are they comfortable with it, are they, you know, is it becoming a little bit too much room? We can address this before we, you know, strip them down to their shorts and throw them in a cage in front of 1,000 people, you know, and the guy goes out there or the girl goes out there and freezes on us. So it's a great tool. I'll do sometimes with the guys, I will say, okay, I'm going to put Darren, you're going to go with Carlos, we're kind of sort of shut the cage off. I'll say, okay, you pick who you want to be in your corner. So he'll pick two of the other guys, and I say, Carlos, who do you want in your corner? And he'll pick two of the other guys. I say, guys, you've got to now coach Darren, you've got to coach Carlos. Everybody else left, I said, I want you to shout and, you know, create some noise. Just so it kind of builds, because I can't be able to fight, so some of the fighters will then learn how to coach. You know, I'll be the referee, and when they're sparring each other, I'll look at a couple of my guys and say, you need to tell him what to do. His back's against the cage, tell him how to escape. You know, so I'm trying to install in them how to coach, because if you start coaching each other, you become a better fighter anyway. So to bring that out, and then sometimes I'll match you know, I'll match a new guy with a guy that's got quite a bit of experience. I'll say to my guys who have experience, don't go out there and just completely iron him out. But then the new guy's really nervous now. And, oh, shit, I've got to spar with Darren, you know. And we can figure out then, you know, what we need to work on. It could be just that he goes out and he's just rushing everything, or he's just not doing enough. So I can say, look, don't go out there. You're not gonna beat him. Go out there, use the skills that you've been learning in training. Or he's not doing nothing. He's just like every time the guy moves forward, he's moving back and covering up. And say, look, you need to get your head up. You need to find your range, find your distance, use your jab. You know, recognize certain things. If you want to take him down, we're gonna get him to come forward. We're gonna change our level. So kind of. Sort of real kind of once we've got them, you know, stronger. Once we've got them more flexible, we'll look at the kind of mental side of things in training before we. So sparring's a big thing. You can sometimes some people focus too much on sparring, and I feel like they'll leave their fight in the gym. So I always say to the guys, you're training partners, not training competitors. We have a level of competitiveness in the gym, but it's not. I don't want one guy to destroy another guy's confidence, you know. So we kind of use that as a tool of, you know, the levels of sparring. But if you're going to compete, you're going to have to put what we call the big gloves on. We're going to test your heart a little bit, you know, because you might find it's not for you, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot. I've had some amazing guys that have never competed because they don't like competing. They're not competitors, you know, but they'll come in, they'll spar with all the best guys, and sometimes they're great to have around because they're really good at helping you out. They sometimes turn into very good coaches as well. They might have done a competition and it's not for them, the lights, the cameras, it's not for them, you know. And you might find that you can get good and then you find that you don't want to go to that next level, but you want to carry on learning the martial arts, because like I said, it carries on outside the gym, you know, it carries on in your everyday life. I think, like, learning to fight is like learning to swim. It's a life skill. What you do with it, you know, you might become a competitive swimmer, but you know lots of people can swim, you know. So I think fighting is the same thing. I think, you know, you should learn how to defend yourself because you never know when you're going to need it, but you then don't have to become and compete. So big tool for me is sparring. Obviously, you know, nutrition and drilling, you know, like practicing stuff over. And if I show you something, if I show you how to take somebody's back and put a rear naked choke in, I can show it to you and you can try it and it's not going to work for you. It doesn't mean it doesn't work. The technique works, you just don't know how to do it. So that repetitive movement, drilling, alongside sparring, fit and strong, generally will equalise. If you wanted to compete, you could.
Fascinating. Really fascinating. Thanks for that. Just before we wrap up, Paul, if people wanted to get hold of you, get in touch, ask you some questions, or just make some inquiries, really, about coming to train with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
I'm not a big social media guy, but I do have an Instagram account. That's when I did open it. I got so many messages like, where are you on Instagram? So it's coach_Hines, H-I-N-E-S, _MMA. That's my Instagram account. I have a Facebook account, but I never go on Facebook. I'm sure you message me on Facebook. It's taken me weeks to get back to you. Or just come to the gym. Like, you know, if you go online and look for the MMA clinic, it would normally direct you to the Angel Gym, which is like the headquarters. We do have a gym in Romford as well, and you can just drop in. Like, really, we've had people pass and they'll come in and they'll start talking to us and they'll book an intro to do a one-to-one with the coaches, and they'll go, oh, I've been walking past here for the last year and I just came. And I said, why didn't you come in a year ago? And like, oh, I wasn't sure. Like, it's really not what you think it is. I think a lot of people, you know, They want to do it, but they think, oh, they're going to make me compete, or they're going to make me, you know, I'm going to be fighting as soon as I walk in. It's really, really not like that. It's really friendly. It's, you know, we want people to experience, you know, martial arts, and it's so, you know, don't be scared. Like, come in, like, you know, phone us up. We're not going to sort of, you know, drag you into competition or something like that. You know, it's one of the things, you can't make somebody fight. You can't make somebody compete. You know, you've got to come to me. You've got to say to me, oh, what do you think about doing a competition? And we'll, like I say, we'll find out. We'll put you on, we'll match you on the right shows. But before you even get to that show, you would have done all the preparation in the gym, you know, mentally and physically. So the best thing is MMA Clinic, www.mmaclinic.com. My Instagram again, coach_HinesMMA. But yeah, you know, come a lot here. People think it's not for them, and then they do. Oh, I wish I'd done this years ago.
I can completely second that, because, you know, when we last caught up, I brought some of my athletes with me to try it out, and they were a bit nervous, but then literally as soon as they got in there, they were loving it, and as soon as we left, they were like, when are we going to go again? So
it's fun. I mean, it is fun. It's fun. I mean, yeah. there's kind of like this big movement these days sometimes where we're not, you know, we can't sort of play rough, you know. I think it's doing an injustice to young people to experience, a bit of a rough and tumble, really. I mean, I think it's in our DNA. And like I say, I think it's a life skill. I think, you know, you come and experience it. Even if you do it for a couple of months, you'll learn something. You'll learn something about yourself, you know. And sometimes it's not what everybody wants to hear. Like I say, I've seen big tough men crying their eyes out, you know. And I've seen, you know, this angelic young lady come in, just like, you know, within 6 months she's got somebody's back and she's choking them out. She's like, yeah, you know, like, you know, so, you know, if you think it's not for you, come and give it a go. You might be surprised, you know, like, I think it can help us all become better people. I mean, it's a bit cliche, but I think, especially in the world, especially in London, everything's so compressed and so compacted in. You need that little bit of, you know, once you get on the mat and you're in your shorts and t-shirt, nobody knows what you do for a living, nobody knows who you are, nobody cares. You know, we're in North London and we've got, you know, people that support Arsenal and Tottenham that get on, so, you know, when you're on the mat, it doesn't matter, you know, so. Sometimes I think you can be in a high pressure job where you're responsible for a lot of people, a lot of money, or you could be a plumber, you can work in Tesco, you could be a lawyer, you could be a police officer, you could be a criminal, and you're all equal on the mat, and everybody gets on with everybody. It's a very humbling experience, and it's really good for bringing people together that would not normally talk to each other, you know. That guy who's a barrister wouldn't talk to that guy who's worked at checkout at Tesco. All of a sudden, they're best mates on the mat, you know, in the training partners. You know, any other environment, they would never talk to each other.
Awesome.
So it's a great leveller, you know, like, and we try to sort of, you know, it can get a little bit heated sometimes, but that's more with the athletes. You know, once they start competing, you get some prima donnas and a little bit of motion run high, but generally people that come in and just train, you know, get on really well, really, and then it's a very mixed bags of different cultures, different religions, different football teams, different jobs, and you would never guess sometimes the guy who's sitting on the mat, what, you know, or the young lady, what they do for a living, and, you know, and it's quite surprising sometimes.
Bit of a reality check for most, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is, and, you know, I think it's good for us all, really. Mm. I think if we taught it at school, I think we'd have, you know, I think it would stop a lot of problems, you know, that we've got.
Yeah.
And people would get on better, you know. But it is hard to sometimes drive that home to people when people, you know. I have two young brothers, you know, one of them 17, one of them was 19, and they just want to be professional fighters. And to be fair, they've got something about them that they could. And they come from a very middle-class background. They could go to university. They don't want to go to university. I'm making sure, I always make sure my guys that want to be professional fighters have a plan B. So I'll you know, make them do a college course or something as well. I've gone both jobs on reception, so they don't have to pay for their membership, or their parents don't have to pay for their membership. But I'm sure from the outside, from their parents' point of view, it's mostly not what they want for their kids. But they're in a safe environment, and like we try to, you know, make sure that they are, you know, we have to kick them out of the gym. But I'm very sort of saying, what are you doing at home? You know, if you're going to dedicate yourself to this sport, you need to be studying in your downtime as well. So
I'll make sure I put the links to your Instagram and to the website for the gym into the show notes, so people can click on directly. But please stay on the line. I just wanted to say thanks for your time. I've really enjoyed chatting to you, and I've learned loads of stuff and found out loads of stuff I didn't know. So I hope the listeners found it insightful. And
I hope so.
And I'm sure some of them will be getting in touch with you soon. So thanks again, mate, and all the best.
All right. Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot for having me on. It's really good to sort of get on and sort of reach out to people that maybe don't know a lot about sport, or maybe have sort of some preconceptions about sport, and hopefully I've sort of put it in a good light for them.
Thanks for listening to the 15th episode. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please leave us a rating and or review on whichever platform you're listening on. Please check out our website, www.extremesportsperformance.com. On our media page, we have weekly blogs that include Thought of the Week, Exercise of the Week, Recipe of the Week, and Training Song of the Week. Each month's collection gets compiled into our monthly newsletter along with company service and store updates. You can sign up for free to receive this via our subscribe page. Our online store consists of training programs, online and in-person coaching, nutrition plans, toolbox, and interactive training systems. Please follow us on our social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Links to these can be found at the bottom of every page on our website or via any search engine. That's all for now. Until next time, take care.